Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Wisconsin followed the nationwide trend this year with record mail-in and early voting. The state has, of course, been hit hard by the coronavirus pandemic, leading many to avoid polling place lines on Election Day and choose a safer way to vote. The question now is if those voter trends will continue into future election years, or if this is a fluke in the time of COVID-19. And if there is a shift in voter trends, is now the time for lawmakers and election officials to look at policies and laws in place around early and mail-in voting? Anthony Fowler is a leading University of Chicago scholar on voting and voter behavior. He spoke with Lake Effect's Becca Schimmel about voter trends this year and for future elections.
Just about everything is different this year, in elections and in everything else, obviously. It's nice to see so many states making an effort to try to make it easy for people to vote early, vote by mail, and vote safely in light of the pandemic. And so we are seeing record numbers of early and mail votes coming in. And so that's a good sign that people are still able to safely vote during the pandemic. I've seen a lot of claims that we should therefore predict that, you know, we're overall going to have record levels of turnout. And I personally think it's a little too early to say that, because I guess I don't know. I don't have any good way of knowing how many of those people who are voting earlier by mail are just people who would have voted anyway in person, but they chose to vote early and by mail because of the pandemic. So I hope that, you know, turnout numbers are not down because of the pandemic and all of the extra challenges of the 2020, but I don't have any, you know, haven't seen any convincing evidence that turnout is going to be way up in 2020, you know, compared to previous presidential years either. So we're obviously eager to see what's going to happen. And what's, you know, as I said, everything is different this year.
Yeah, it seems like there's a different energy behind voting this year. Have you seen or felt that yourself?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, one of the things that political science has documented is that, you know, one of the most effective ways to get people to turn out is through some kind of personal contact, you know, door-to-door canvassing, face-to-face contact, in-person campaign events, et cetera. And those are all down because of the pandemic, as they should be, for safety reasons, for health and safety reasons. But that's one reason to worry that maybe turnout is going to be down this year, over and above just the logistical challenges of people getting to the polling location or learning how to vote by mail. So if anything, you might have predicted, if you had asked me months ago, you might have predicted that turnout could be considerably down this year because of all those extra challenges, because of less in-person campaigning and the extra challenges associated with voting. So if anything, you might have, you know, you might worry that there's less activity, less excitement, less of the kinds of events that get people, you know, mobilized to vote. But of course, it's a presidential election year. It's, you know, as always, there's a very stark choice between between the Democratic and Republican candidates for president, and there's lots of other important races on the ballot. So there are certainly people who are motivated to vote, but if anything, you might say there's less of the kinds of activities this year that should mobilize people than we normally experience in a presidential election year.
We're seeing more people voting in ways they didn't before, at least. What impact do you think that could have on future elections?
Yeah, that's interesting. It could very well be that after people have figured out how to vote by mail the first time, myself included, I voted by mail for the first time this year in our primary. You might find that it's nice, you know, it's easier and more convenient and less hectic than showing up to the polling place and voting in person. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see mail voting, you know, increase nationwide as a result of this election. Surely some people will go back to doing what they did before, but I think a lot of people might have learned that mail voting is surprisingly convenient, and you know, and if you compare it to the challenges and difficulties of going to your polling location, they might actually prefer it. Another really nice benefit of mail voting that I think a lot of people are experiencing for the first time this year is that for all of those down ballot races, you can take the time, you know, in the comfort of your own, you know, your dining room table, and you can go look up details about those candidates, details about those races. And so when you might have normally shown up to the polling place and you knew who you were going to vote for president and for Congress and maybe a few other high salient things, maybe you get down to these judicial retention races or, you know, ballot initiatives that you haven't heard of, you might you might not have even thought about it. You might not even vote, or you might just have to kind of come up with a decision right there on the spot. For mail voting, you might actually have the chance to cast a more informed vote as well. So there's an extra benefit of mail voting over and above the convenience, which is that the voters themselves might actually cast more informed votes, especially for some of these down ballot offices and issues. So that might be a benefit that a lot of voters see, and maybe we should expect to see more mail voting in the future across the country.
Are there any voting trends that you've seen so far that have kind of surprised you
this year? Well, you know, I mean, I guess I'm pleasantly surprised to see the record amounts of early voting and mail voting. It wasn't obvious that we were going to get there. If you had asked me back in April, we would have said, you know, we should expect really low levels of turnout. It's going to be really difficult for people. Certainly, we saw some of that in the primaries. It was so early in the pandemic that people didn't have time to figure out how to vote by mail, and they legitimately didn't want to go, vote in person. And so we probably did have suppressed levels of turnout in the primaries. And so I've been pleasantly surprised to see the extent to which voters and election officials have kind of stepped up to make voting possible during this pandemic. So that I've been pleased by that. I don't know if there's any other obvious things. I think there will be a lot of interesting things to look at after the election when we have more reliable data to see, how many people really did vote, who did vote, of course, you're always interested in the representativeness of the voting population. Typically, older people are overrepresented and white people are overrepresented and rich people are overrepresented. And it'll be interesting to see, have any of those patterns changed this year? Did more young people go out and vote because of the importance of this election, or because of the convenience of voting by mail, et cetera? Those will be really interesting things to look at. But so far we haven't found any reliable way to significantly change the representativeness of the voting population. I'd be skeptical that mail voting all of a sudden brought lots of young people into the polls who wouldn't have voted otherwise, but that'll be something interesting to look at.
And are there any questions that you're really looking forward to asking of the data and information after the election's over and you can actually gather that kind of data that you're really itching to find out more about?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm most of what I do is not driven by the news cycle. So most of what I do is I think about, long run problems in democracy and long run issues and patterns. And I'm often analyzing historical data. So I'm not necessarily, I don't have any, immediate plans to like download the exit polls on election night and run some regressions, because I think sometimes it takes longer to do good social science than that. But certainly there are lots of, I think this pandemic will provide, and the uniqueness of this election will surely provide lots of interesting opportunities for researchers to answer new questions or even answer longstanding questions in a new way. So I think the big ones for me are about the composition of the electorate and the voting population and how voting technology and how the pandemic might affect that. And of course, Donald Trump is a unique politician in many ways. And so we're also interested in, how his behavior and how his positions are affecting long run trends in voting behavior. In 2016, for example, the relationship between income and vote choice was lower than it had been in many recent elections. Typically, rich people are much more likely to vote for Republicans. And in 2016, that flattened out significantly with a lot of, affluent, educated people voting for Clinton, and with a lot of working class people kind of switching their normal trend and voting for Trump. And so it'll be interesting to see if that trend persists in 2020 or if 2020 looks a little bit more like a normal election. And then, of course, what'll be especially interesting will be beyond 2020, if and when Donald Trump is no longer a major player in the Republican Party, do things sort of go back to the way they were, or has he permanently shifted the direction of the Republican Party forever? And do we see some kind of permanent shift in the issues being discussed and the divisions between the voters, et cetera?
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what the effects of policies made during this administration, voting trends, and like you said, the makeup of both parties, how they'll change as a result. I think when you see kind of a farther push to the extremes on either side of the party, it does influence, but for how long is a great question. How do you think confidence in our election system has changed?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, confidence in our election system is just about one of the most important, if not the most important things in a democracy, right? One of the, you know, you want people to vote and participate in the process, and you want people to respect the results of that process, regardless of what they are. And there are certainly good reasons to be worried about confidence in our system, largely because we've had an unprecedented level of you know, concern expressed about you know, the integrity of our elections by high-ranking government officials. And you know, when what the president says and does matters. And so when the president says we shouldn't trust the results of elections, you can imagine that lots of other people who support the president will feel the same way and will feel like, you know, maybe there's something wrong with our democracy. So that's a very concerning development in our democracy that's fairly new in, you know, in modern American politics. So that's certainly something to pay close attention to. I hope that in some ways the president has not been all that successful in undermining the integrity of our elections, but that's something that we need to pay very close attention to. And if Donald Trump loses this election, if he loses, you know, if it's a close with the result, and will they contest the results of the election? And, will, you know, I think that's always true to some extent. People are upset when they're on the losing side of the election, but at the very least, you know, it's important that we respect the outcome of the election and then we have a peaceful transition of power going forward. So, you know, that this is, in some ways, this is uncharted territory for us who study, and for the people who study kind of modern democracies and modern American politics, this is not something we've had to think very much about, but I think it's a very important thing to pay close attention to, and it's a thing to be worried about for sure.
And I think that studying modern democracies just makes me think of the change that's occurred across the world. You know, it's really been a change in the extreme of the different parties' rise in popularism across the world that we've seen, not just in this country, but in others as well. And speaking just specifically about voting policies in America, in past years, we've seen an increase in policies around voter ID and specifications for those forms of ID. What policies or ideas around voting do you think might be pushed in the coming years or even brought back up?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I think probably we do need to have very serious conversations that include both Democrats and Republicans about the integrity of our elections. And so to the extent that there are concerns about voter fraud, and you know, I think we shouldn't be complacent. We shouldn't just say voter fraud doesn't happen. That's ridiculous. We need to get together and say, okay, what kinds of voter fraud are we really worried about, and how can we mitigate those concerns? So, for example, you know, with unprecedented levels of mail voting, there are certainly new things that election officials have to be worried about that they weren't thinking about seriously before. Mail voting does raise concerns that maybe somebody might vote on behalf of somebody else or coerce someone to vote in a particular way. Mail voting potentially might make it easier for somebody to tamper with ballots compared to in-person voting. And so those are all things that election officials should worry about. They shouldn't be complacent. They should try to mitigate. But they're not necessarily reasons to not have mail voting, especially during a pandemic. So those are just things we need to think about. So, you know, the conversation about voter fraud and election integrity does often become a kind of partisan thing where, you know, Democrats say it doesn't exist at all and Republicans say it's a huge problem. And there's got to be some middle ground where, you know, we've been looking very hard for voter fraud. We've been trying to find it. And of course, there are isolated problems that do occur, but there is not widespread evidence of massive voter fraud. And I think we need to do as much as we can to both mitigate voter fraud as much as possible and also make the public aware that, you know, we're doing the best we can and that they should largely trust the results of our elections. So, you know, I can see a lot, you know, I can imagine lots of reforms being tried in the future, both, you know, on either side, trying to make it either harder for people to vote or easier for people to vote. And those are things that we should be seriously discussing. You know, if voter ID really is a way to mitigate voter fraud, I think we should be happy to talk about it. But if voter ID is just another way to try to make it harder for people to vote who legitimately should be able to vote, then obviously we shouldn't seriously entertain that. So, you know, it's unfortunate that so many of these issues are partisan, and, you know, and of course, any politician who advocates for some kind of electoral reform, they're, of course, always going to be thinking about their own re-election incentives. They often got elected under the current system, so they're resistant to support any changes to the electoral system. But those are conversations we need to have, and we should try to have them in you know, the least partisan ways that we can.
I think that's when every 4 years we hear the conversation around electoral college versus popular vote.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, there's certainly a sense among Democrats now that the Electoral College is bad for them. And so, you know, Democrats are usually the ones who want to get rid of the Electoral College, but that could change in the future. Of course, we've had two very recent salient incidents where the winner of the popular vote did not win the Electoral College, but it could go either way, you know, at some point in the future as well. But yeah, that's another, you know, important discussion that we probably should have at some point as a democracy. There probably is not a compelling ethical or legal reason to have the Electoral College, or a political reason to have it. You know, there are lots of good reasons probably to get rid of the Electoral College, regardless of just the partisan interests of one side versus the other. But yes, that's probably a conversation we should be having, not right before an election, but maybe we should be having that conversation in 2021. And, you know, lots of states are having that conversation to some extent already.
Do you think that the anxiety around voting and the election has changed compared to other elections that you've paid close attention to or looked at?
What do you mean by anxiety around voting?
I guess that there seems to be a lot of anxiety about trusting the election and the ways in which people are voting. There seems to be a lot of messaging about how people should vote and a lot of push for the ways in which people should vote and things like that, which could raise the anxiety around voting.
Mm-hmm. I think these issues have always been a big deal in democracy for, you know, as long as there have been elections. There are always debates about, you know, how easy or hard should it be for people to vote? And, you know, of course, there are political considerations. Every politician wants the rules to be as favorable to them as possible. And so in the kind of modern political era in the United States, there is this notion that the people who tend to vote tend to be demographically the kinds of people who support Republicans. They're at least more likely to be in that camp. Kind of older, white, church-going people, for example, they're much more likely to vote than other Americans are. And so there is this sense that if we make it easier for people to vote and we get more people voting, that's good for Democrats. If we make it more restrictive, that's good for Republicans. And so usually you do have this tension, you know, this tension between the political sides. And that's been going on since before, you know, Donald Trump was a political player. But in 2016, and certainly in 2020, those kinds of discussions became even more salient because now you have a presidential candidate and now the president who are essentially saying we shouldn't trust the results of elections. And that's a fairly new thing in modern American politics that we should be very worried about. So we should expect, you know, debates about, you know, what kinds of electoral reforms should we have, what kinds of policies should we have, et cetera, how stringent should the requirements for voting be. Those have always been a big deal in American politics. But the rhetoric that that somehow the election is fraudulent and we shouldn't trust the results of the election, that's a very dangerous thing that's fairly new, especially coming from the sitting president. So that's certainly a new trend that gives us, I think, reasons to worry even more than normal about the nature of the sort of health of our democracy in general, I guess. Yeah.
Anthony Fowler is a leading University of Chicago scholar on voter behavior. He spoke with Lake Effect's Becca Schimmel about voter trends in this year's election.